But first, a word from our sponsor. Zero Height's annual How We Document report is here. We surveyed over 500 design system professionals about their design systems, team makeup, documentation, and tooling to pull together a comprehensive state of the design system industry. Did you know that 72% of companies have a dedicated design systems team, but only 30% of those teams are using versioning on their design system documentation? Dive into these stats and way more by downloading the report at zerohight.com/how-we-document. Back to the podcast. On today's show, we're going to be talking about getting past the MVP state of your design system. What are the things you need to care about once you've passed that V1 hurdle? What you should you be aiming for? And is it okay to spend 20 years trying to reach MVP? I'm Luke Murphy, and I'm joined by my co-host, Michelle Chin. We're both design advocates at Zero Height, the design system management platform, and this is Design Systems WTF.
Dear God, can you imagine working for 20 years on an MVP? Anyway, I interrupted.
Yes. I mean, that's what I was about to ask. Like, what's the longest you've spent within design systems or just in product on a single MVP?
I guess it depends on how you define MVP, but I feel like every design system I've worked on has gone through multiple iterations of an MVP, right? So we build a library, get pieces coded, and then, I don't know, a rebrand comes along or something happens and... Yep.
You get a new VP of design who decides that they need a complete overhaul of everything just because.
Yeah, and I think also we switch tools, right? So like we went from one design application to another. So then, I don't know, I feel like I'm bringing up past traumas.
I mean, it's, yeah, and I think I was once on a product team that we spent... I think it was just under 18 months developing. This was not design system. This was just a product feature, but developing the MVP of a product feature, which as Rachel in the chat has mentioned, is not very V. It's not very viable. And I don't think it's very minimum either. it is a hurdle that I think a lot of people fall into in like, and I think part of this is just the fact that it's, it seems to be pretty common that folks maybe don't define what done is for MVP. And I think that it's really important to like point out that whole done, not done for the design system, but done for that stage of the design system, right?
Yeah, for sure. I think a lot of it's just sometimes it comes out of necessity, like in order to do design well or to do it at scale, just your day-to-day basics, you're like, I just need a design like UI kit. And then engineers will do the same thing. I need like reusable components. And you're just thinking about that, but there's so much more once you get those things that I think a lot of times people don't think about because you're just kind of in this like, I don't know, panic mode maybe. At least I was in a panic mode.
So I suppose a good place to start with this when we're discussing it is like, and I think we have slightly different takes on this in terms of like what we're talking about when we're talking about stages of the design system. What do you see as the MVP? And I know that it changes for everybody, but there are some common markers. Well, there should be some common markers of what an MVP is for a design system. So what do you see the main markers of like stage one?
I think it's just getting, so it's getting your most common components created in a design kit and a coded at like component library, maybe some documentation. But I think that's it. And then as like a very, very MVP.
See, I'd probably put released and used by like one team.
Yeah.
Or like, yeah, like basically having some real world use is like a pretty good end marker. I think the only other thing I'd include in there is like some kind of roadmap, like some kind of plan, I think is like a good, and I think that it's actually something that a lot of people, they get too caught up in the artifacts of the design system and they don't think about the plan as part of the MVP process, as in like, you know, running things like your, you know, auditing what you currently have and doing the prioritization and coming up with, even if it's just a really loose plan. And I mean, I'd also chuck in things like, you know, what your communication plan is, what your like plans are for how you are going to get to that next stage, like what the team's going to look like, whether it's, you know, federated or central or hybrid. Like all these things, I think that like are part of that plan. It's basically decisions. There's like, I think there's a lot of decisions that are involved in the MVP as well as the actual sort of artifacts that are being produced. And yeah, I do think that like documentation is, I don't know, a lot of people see it as a nice to have in the MVP. And I think it's maybe we're biased here.
I mean, it's, yeah, you know. I think it's definitely vital whether people get to it or not is a different question. I know a lot of when I was working with the team, like we were so fatigued and just trying to get things built that it was just, we were like maxed out. I mean, granted, we were a federated grassroots team, so we had other things that we had to do, like design features and build them. So
it's and I mean, that is pretty common, right? It's like usually, I don't know, I found that stage one, it's not, it's maybe shouldn't be the case, but it's not uncommon that it's a grassroots effort or it's a side project that's happening as a way to like prove out the efficacy of design systems as a concept. But I think that's the thing. It's like for a successful MVP, it is like around establishing it properly and starting to get that like advocacy around the company and getting the communication. So I suppose that, you know, what moves us on pretty easily to like, how do you get out of the, like, how do you get into the next stage, which I suppose is, to me at least, like it's the growing adoption stage, right?
Yeah, I think, yeah, I guess also, I don't know, part of me considers like getting some real investment in it, which I guess is adoption related, adjacent.
Yeah. I think part of this is around the, if you set your goals for the MVP, I think it's one thing, well, I mean, we know this from running the How We Document report, right? That not enough people currently set goals, even when they have mature design systems. But it's like understanding the, you know, what the end result is in a way that is understandable to the people who need to sign this off, which unfortunately will probably be in the form of KPIs or OKRs or something. And then, you know, actually presenting that back. And I think it's like a lot of communication that needs to happen there.
Yeah, I think it, you know, working toward getting out of the MVP, it dawned on me as a design system manager, like I need to put this in with the goals and the KPIs as a like, look, if you have this goal of, I don't know, delivering features for this many customers, you need a design system. So it was more of like, I was like, where can I insert design system into everyone's goals? And it was helpful in getting traction. Because yeah, you are starting to speak the same language as stakeholders. Because I think when they see that you've done a grassroots effort to make a design system, they got it for free. And they're like, oh yeah, you have a design system. I don't know why you need more resources. You were able to build this from nothing. I don't get it. Like you should be fine. And they kind of ignore that. And they don't invest in it, but shoving it into some goals and some KPIs is like a really great way to get that visibility.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's 100% right. And I actually think that this is, it's an interesting one. Cause do you have any other advice around like how to make sure that people aren't seeing this as a free addition to your team?
I would have loved to have tried this, and I don't know if I have the guts. Well, maybe now I do, because as I've gotten older. I just don't care. Well, I do care, but I just don't censor myself nearly as much. But I've had other leaders of design system teams kind of protest, right? They say, we're not going to work on the design system for free anymore. If you want us to keep creating these components, then you must give us the right resources and the right time, and we're not doing anything. And that kind of, so it ends up hurting all the other teams and the way those teams, like, nobody wants to hurt other teams, but what ends up happening is that these other teams start to also protest of like, look, we're being blocked because we don't have funding for the design system. So it's kind of one of those like strength in numbers where people start to rally and advocate on your behalf. And I've heard two people
unionize.
Yeah, exactly. I've heard two different design system teams do this, and it kind of strong-armed stakeholders into resourcing the design system.
I do think that that's not, I think that's a great idea, to be honest. But then, you know, I come from the land of unions, so that's that's not surprising. I think that I think also, like, just talking in the, like, being able to talk and quantify the issue there, right? Where it's like, say, yeah, cool, I can spend 50% of my time on the design system, but it means that I'm going to be spending, well, in an ideal world, it means I'm going to be spending 50% of my time on product. So therefore, this is the result of that. This is the amount of things that we're going to ship less. That makes sense. The fewer things that we're going to ship. God, words today. But also, if you're actually being realistic with that, you actually need to add in the context switch time as well. So it's actually, in reality, it's like the most that you could get out of somebody is 40% product work, 40% design system work, and 20% context switching work, because there's always that context switching cost. And it means that, you know, you're basically trying to resource a team that probably needs at least three people with 1.5 people. So you're not going to get the results that you need.
Yeah, it is. It almost comes down to like basic math. And I think sometimes highlighting the risks of not doing so might resonate more than making the case for doing something. So I'm always like, hey, do we want to retain designers?
I mean, that's always a really good one, because it is very costly, and like, it's costly from both like a time and money point of view to hire designers, especially in these markets where I mean, at the moment maybe it's not a great example of this, but it has been and will get back to the point where good design and good engineering resource is hard to get and expensive to get. So the more you can retain your people, the better it will be for your company and your product.
Yeah, right? For sure. And if a company doesn't make a design system, like, what? Why would a designer want to work at that company? Like, why would you make my life harder, right? Like, I will find somewhere that has a design system that I can easily do my work, right? So
I think for me, like, one of the tips to ease that transition as well, and I mentioned it previously, but just want to like labor it, is in your MVP, if you're still in your MVP phase, or even if you didn't do this in your MVP phase and you're finding it hard to move into future phases, I can't understate, that's the word I was looking for. I can't understate the importance of building community within your company around the design system. It's something that I think a lot of people gloss over at the very beginning because they're so focused on the work that they don't have, you know, anybody or any part of anybody's time of actually trying to like gather support for the design system and gather those advocates for the design system internally. It is much harder to deprioritize or like under-resource a project if nobody cares about it. If everyone cares about it. If it's something that people are actively talking about, it's what you're talking about, strength in numbers, right?
Yep.
If a lot of people are really wanting this to happen, then it's an easier sell to get that resource. on the converse, if nobody knows about it and nobody really cares about it and everyone's just kind of like, oh, yeah, that's just that thing that Michelle does over in the corner, then it's going to be pretty easy for somebody sitting in a senior leadership meeting to be like, yeah, well, we don't actually need it, do we? And so I think that that's like, it's something that I think a lot of people see as a bit of a soft and fuzzy thing. It's not. Like, it's the same for anything. It's one of the... As you go up in senior leadership, I feel like one of the, like, massively undervalued skills is the, like, wheeling and dealing.
Yeah, totally. It's not, like... I think in one of the first Howie Document webinar, we talked about how design systems really isn't about design at all. And
yeah,
you're doing a lot more, like, change management, negotiation, communicating. So little design. And I think that's also part of the challenge, is that a lot of people come into design systems wanting to do that design work, like, you know, finessing colors and creating variants, that type of stuff, which is definitely needed. But people who are focused on that aren't necessarily thinking about, oh, hey, I should be talking to other people and getting champions. And I think not just design leadership champions, but thinking outside of that. So even engineering executives, if you can get them on board, that's really helpful. Because I think to some extent, especially for enterprise companies that are very heavily engineering driven, they have more, I guess, clout than, like, say, your design leader. And then even, like, brand and marketing leadership, too. If you can get them on board, that's super helpful. Because they are affected by the design system. Maybe not directly in terms of the day-to-day, but, like, overall with, like, the brand and consistency and, you know, customer, like, trust and usage. Like, that's really important.
Well, and also they're usually a key part of the go-to-market motion within the company as well. So they actually have, I don't know, I think a lot of people, and maybe I'm just saying this because, you know, I've spent my life sort of flip-flopping between marketing and product design. But but they have a lot more sway than I think a lot of product folks give them credit for. I know I've definitely known marketing leaders who can come in and completely screw up an entire organization very easily. So get them on board. They're much better to have on side. We're going to move to some questions soon if anybody has some. So I'm just, that's an advance warning for the listeners here to start actually asking the questions. Otherwise, we'll just keep talking. I did pull together some, like, advice that I had for, like, starting stage two as well. And by the way, when I talk about these stages, I know that, again, as I said, I think we have slightly different views. I use Sparkbox's maturity model as, like, my Bible. So we'll stick a link to that in the show notes. I'll stick a link to that in the chat now. But I think it's really good. And that next stage, so the next stage is, like, growing adoption. I did like jot down some bits. I think that one is, I think we kind of mentioned this as well in terms of, like, how to scale out, but I do think that if you're going into stage two and there's only one person working on the design system, or one person is, like, a core team member, you need a team.
Yeah.
It was like the way that I looked at it was like, overlords don't scale. So I think it's pretty true. Strengthen your community, I think, is, like, one that we've talked a lot about. You know, make sure you're consistently talking to your advocates, because bottom up is a lot easier than top down. You don't want to start getting yourself into that, like, siloed design system team sitting on a hill, shouting down, dictating to the masses. Now, I've got one that's slightly controversial, and I want to hear your take on. Don't get hung up on contribution. Don't get hung up on governance. Don't get hung up on automation. My main reason for this is basically I reckon that they can probably wait until stage three. You can have, like, super lightweight for each of those things, because your focus, your sole focus for the team at that point, to me, is about making sure the design system actually gets used.
Yeah, I think I get that, but I also, I'm like, you know, I feel like it's a fast follow, right? Like, especially at, like, an enterprise company, because people are going to start asking questions, and not because they're trying to poke holes in things, they're just trying to understand how things work so they can participate. So I think I've done that where it's like, governance can wait. Let's just ease into it. But people are like, well, can this be a component? Can that be a component? Can I submit the component? Is it your job to make the component? Are you going to tell me? And it's just like, good grief. Like, I didn't think we had to address this yet. And then you're just kind of suddenly rushing into some sort of process, which is fine. Like, and I totally am not like, let's make this like rigid process that everyone has to follow. It's more like ease into it. Like, okay, figure out some of those questions.
That's it.
And then, you know, I like to work within like how people kind of existing, like their existing workflows of like, oh, we do design reviews. Okay, let's make that part of the governance process, because change is hard. And so if you have people shift in how they do their day to day, like, I don't know, it's just gonna be very difficult. You'll also probably become very unpopular. But
preach.
Yeah, I think.
I think that's 100% right. I think it's like if you need those things, and yeah, you're right. You probably will need them to a degree. But I think it's like MVP them. I think that's the thing. Don't get hung up on like perfect process, because you can end up making it so your life is going to be harder because you're making people jump through unnecessary hoops, or you're doing it in a way that they're not used to working. You know, you're making folks use Trello when they're used to using Jira. I don't know, like whatever it is. I think bake it into the way that people already do things is like great advice. Well, actually on that as well, because I think that, you know, having that backlog is, and so you do need some kind of contribution or governance models to even have a backlog, I suppose, unless you've just got a really active design system team. I think the only other thing I was going to add in there was like actually carve out time to groom and triage that backlog so that it doesn't end up getting to be a unwieldy beast. But I think that's just a product thing.
Yeah, I think in general, probably a good practice, but I don't know. I feel like...
But it's... Well, I think that it's one of those things that I think because design systems are kind of... It's the cobbler's children's shoes problem, where it's like the because it's an internal product, it doesn't get the same rigor and love that an external product would get in terms of like processes a lot of the time. I know, and whether this is right or not, I think this is possibly another podcast episode, but a lot of design system teams don't have PMs for a really long time, so they don't have anybody who, you know, whose job it is to kind of like shepherd that process. I'm not just saying PMs are backlog groomers. That's not,
but it's their it's a specialty to like organize and manage parts and pieces.
It's part of their remit. And so like I think it's just one of those things that it's like it's just a good thing to note, because I think a lot of people can go light on a lot of the things that folks would normally do with product. And then I mean, I feel like this goes without saying, make sure that you're balanced on the design and engineering side. This is one that I am surprised that I have to say, but it's something that we've seen a lot with the customers that we work at with Zero Height, in that it's kind of shocked me since being at Zero Height and chatting to, because obviously my experience before that was just the teams I worked in and the friends teams. And so I assumed everybody had really nicely balanced design system sort of buy-in, or, you know, could have been a little skew-iff, but it was, you know, generally balanced. The reality is far from that, in that there are a lot of teams out there that are design only, and there are a lot of teams out there that are engineering only, or that are very, very skewed to one end or the other. And I do think that, like, to get full buy-in to go, like, to grow and to scale as a design system, I do think that you need, like, a good ratio of design to engineering. Which is probably like, I don't know, one designer to two engineers, at least 1-to-1, like if it's a small team. But like I think having it too outweighed means that you're just not going to be catering to the full needs of your user base, because it's representation, right?
Yeah, for sure. I think that's the thing, is like you, and the earlier you can get that, the better, even if it's just to say like, hey, we're doing this, we'd love your feedback. And maybe they're too busy to provide feedback, but at least they know that you reached out to them, and when the time comes, they'll feel invited to participate. Because otherwise it's just going to seem like, I don't know, design is pushing this on engineering, which that doesn't feel great. But also, like you said, Luke, like it's easy to miss things. We, you know, as a designer, I'm not going to think of all the aspects of code that what people have to think about when making some decisions. So it is helpful.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I suppose to round it out, what happens, you know, just a nice quick question. What happens, Michelle, when you lose resource? Do you just go and cry in the corner?
I think sometimes people do that immediately, especially with like layoffs and stuff. You're like, I'm getting past the MVP, and then suddenly you are kind of back at square one. I think this has happened to a lot of teams that we've worked with. We end up, you know, it's more of like you can go back to the MVP, but try to, you know, keep some momentum, but understand kind of like what the limits are, and that, you know, setting that expectation that the design system isn't going to progress with limited resources. But yeah, I think it's, you know, understand that like the maintenance mode might be for a little bit, but that once the timing's right, like to advocate for it again, it's not a complete setback. It's just the situation that I think a lot of teams are in, even outside of design systems. Roll with the punches, I guess. But yeah, you're not the only one. I think that's the other thing, that this is pretty, I wouldn't say frequent, but it's common among a lot of teams.
It's also, it's also a good skill to have to know when to cut and run.
That too.
Because there are also other design systems out there that you could easily work on. Which I think is, you know, not a... Oh, it's such a positive way to end the podcast. but that is unfortunately all the time that we have for today. If you've got any questions and you want to fire them across to us, or you've got any ideas for future episodes, then please sign up for the Zero Slack community. That's at zeroheight.com/slack. You can reach us on X or Twitter or at Zero Height, or Instagram at Zero Height HQ, or you can email us at community@zeroheight.com. See you next time.
Thanks, everyone.